Namasami. So it's March 16th, 2019, Saturday night talk. There's a sense that springtime is here. You can almost see why they call it spring. Everything's springing up. So the wildflowers are starting to come out, and the ants on all the trails, there's these little holes opening up with little piles of dirt around them. And the ants coming out in their lines and starting to seek whatever they seek, their food, and collecting what they collect. And the frogs coming out in full force. Birds doing their rituals, doing their thing. So easy to, we're part of this as well. It's easy to underestimate the effect the weather has on us. You can see, I've learned to, that's one of the first things I'll think of if somebody tells me how they're doing, if they're not doing well. So I'll check what the weather's doing, or if they're doing really well, I'll check what the weather's doing. And almost always the weather is connected somehow. So easy to have the sunny, bright, bubbly, future-looking energy right now. Winter retreat is 14 days till we have our closing night for winter retreat. And so sense of this home stretch as well. And how to move through these types of experiences. So I was kind of thinking during the meditation, air is really clean with the recent rains, and the really fresh air with the subtle, delicate smells of wildflowers that are coming out, just drifting around the monastery, and the perfect weather, the perfect temperature, good people, good food, good community. Doesn't get much better than this. So then how to move through that, appreciate that, develop gratitude. We might be inclined to think, oh, it's all impermanent. Try to don't attach, or might tell ourselves that, but that's not quite moving through the experience. That's already not it if we're telling ourselves that. But the real non-attachment is how to move through the experience. If we tell ourselves, don't attach to this, and in a sense, that's already the attachment, that's already pushing it away. But the good news is the experience is always there. We can always return to it. One of the things I like about the wildlife is sort of immediate, like with the birds. If you kind of go to sit somewhere in the forest, say, got some anger or really bad mood, you kind of stomp into there, and the birds sort of go quiet or fly away. But then, as soon as the mood changes, as soon as the mood gets good, they come back. So they don't hold a grudge or anything. It's a very immediate experience. They just tap into whatever is happening in the present. So yesterday we went down to visit Gia and Damon in the Bay Area, and Debbie, Ajahn Kurunadama, and myself went down. This is the third time we visited her. The first time was in the hospital. Second time, and this last time was at their home. And for those of you who don't know, she's in her early 40s, and so has what seems to be terminal cancer, although completely we never know with this uncertainty, but at this point it's very difficult, nearly impossible for her to keep food or even liquids down, so has to have like an intravenous nourishment, and it's just very, very thin, under 100 pounds at this point, and just skin and bones, but has a very strong spirit, so it's quite inspiring to see, and in a difficult situation in terms of having a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old. And so we went there yesterday, and the kids were there. And we did some chanting, and it's just a very poignant situation with someone who has what's probably terminal cancer. And it's springtime, and the sun is out, the temperature's good, and the kids are there. The kids have these very youthful, fresh, vibrant energy. And this is all mixed together. This is life. So these kind of experiences, they're very powerful and very exhausting for me. And so we came back. I got back just before evening puja, but both Ajahn Kurunadama and myself decided to head up the hill, skip evening puja, and just have a solitary evening. So walking up the hill, though, and it's just very, very beautiful, very quiet, and pondering these experiences, and went to do some walking meditation at my kuti, and really nice temperature, and very, very quiet, except for what was probably a pygmy owl, and it was... Pygmy owls, they have a little hoot, and they toot about every few seconds. So that was pretty much the only sound in the forest, with this kind of tooting sound every few seconds. And it was just going in a very regular, and then just kind of toot, 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 and then... It stopped, and so I had been listening to it during the walking meditation, so I was just thinking, why did it stop? And I looked up, and there was a helicopter flying overhead, and then the helicopter flew off into the distance, and sure enough, once the helicopter was far enough away, it started again, toot, toot. And that's interesting. It noticed the helicopter and it stopped tooting. And then when the helicopter left, it started going again. So then it kept going for another 30 or 40 minutes or so. And it was just very, very regular. So I was just almost making that the object of meditation and just walking back and forth. And then it stopped again, but this time I looked up, there was no planes, no helicopters. And the thinking, huh, what's going on here? Is it just to get tired, or is there some other reason why it stopped? And then I thought, well, evening puja's ended by now, and people are probably walking up the hill. So, not sure, but I wonder if Josh is walking up to his kuti right now, and that's why it stopped. And so it stopped for about 2 minutes, and then after about 2 minutes, 3 minutes, it started again. So I thought, huh, I wonder if Josh was walking by and it stopped, and then it started again. So then it was going again, and then maybe about 10 minutes later it stopped again. And I thought, I wonder who else lives up here. Well, Anagarika Matt lives in the middle yurt, and that's about where that owl is perched. And so this time it stopped for about 5 minutes. And I thought, oh, maybe that's Anagarika Matt walking up, because he's a bit slower with his, he's got some problems with his feet. And so I'm not completely sure, but then it started again after about 5 minutes, and then it didn't stop. It just kept going and going, and went back into my kuti, and even when I went to sleep, it was still doing those regular toots. And so if that was indeed Josh and Anagarika Matt, I bet you had no idea that there was a pygmy owl watching you very closely. The reason I talk about this is this also links up with what we're studying right now, which is Panya, wisdom, and how we start to, when we use our satipanya, sati being mindfulness, panya, wisdom, or discernment, when we use these faculties of ours, we're starting to connect the dots, starting to connect things together. Panya has this, not only does it connect things together, but it starts to see discerning right and wrong, discerning time and place, discerning appropriateness of a reaction. Thinking that it's one of the things I'm grateful for in terms of being a monk is before I was a monk, I didn't have much sense of right and wrong. And sometimes you see kids or young people and they have a very well-developed sense of right and wrong already, good and bad. And I would attribute that to some sort of barami or a good upbringing. But for myself, I could say I had a good upbringing, but didn't have much of a sense of right and wrong. And after ordaining and starting to learn about the Buddha's teaching, I could start to discern that that's why I was making myself so miserable, was if I reflect on it, it's coming from actions completely directed towards getting things I want or gratifying myself in some way, and sometimes even to the exclusion of others. And the result of that, rather than being happiness and gratification, was making myself miserable. But then not having that faculty to connect the dots, link things together, and coming to the monastery, learning the Buddha's teaching, starting to learn about things like service and letting go of one's own preferences for the preferences of the group, and then seeing that, almost paradoxically, that leads to a very heightened sense of well-being. The panya coming up to see, oh, that's interesting, that's how it works. And so slowly starting to develop that sense of good and bad, right and wrong, time and place. And over time, we practice the punya, the discernment faculty, it starts to become more natural and more fluid, I guess you could say. It's even like a expression of mindfulness. So the mindfulness is well established, and four foundations of mindfulness. Mindfulness established in the body, and there's that Dhamma Vichaya with the cultivating that sense of looking inwards and investigation. And this doesn't necessarily mean thinking all the time, but contemplating in terms of using the awareness to look at things, to look into deeply. And then the punya, the discernment arising as a expression of that mindfulness and that investigation, and the way we're using our awareness for the contemplation. So that's a connection to make, is can we actually see with discernment where our moods are coming from, how they're arising, impulses, what different impulses, motivations, intentions, what's driving them, where does the pressure come from? Whatever we crave, whatever train of thought or whatever habit we have, there's something motivating it. There's an impulse behind it. So starting to discern, just like the way, whether it's rainy or sunny, can have an effect on our mood. Really starting to see that. And that way we can check if we're in a crummy mood or grumpy, we can have a kind of checklist. Oh, what's the weather doing today? Oh, it's raining. Oh, it's cold. It's like, oh, I feel really great today. I feel really wonderful. Checklist. Oh, the sun's out. The temperature's perfect. The birds are singing. And it's so basic, so primal, so simple. Experience is always here, the presence always right here for us to tap into, so we can lose it temporarily and be off in the future. Mind is off making plans, off in the future. We start to see with discernment, okay, well, what's experience like when the mind is off in the future? What's it like in the present when the mind is off in the future? I see there's a bit of maybe like the tension in the face, the sense of subtle or not so subtle agitation in the body, increased heart rate, getting excited. We can start to link that up. Okay, well, yeah, thinking about the future, making plans, getting excited about something. And that's not to say we don't make plans or we don't think about the future, but just to start to link up the experience, like to connect the dots, make sense of what we're experiencing in the present. Because it doesn't happen randomly or in a vacuum. Or we're not, and we're also not just resigned to some sort of fatalistic approach where it's like, oh, I can't do anything about it anyway. But just starting to see with discernment why we're experiencing what we're experiencing. So can't be emphasized enough. It's a really important point. There's a one of the teachings that Ajahn Titipaño was reading the other day really struck me and really resonated well with me. It was a teaching the Buddha gives around how to benefit from listening to a Dhamma talk. And this links up with the Paññā faculty as well. And it's an angle we don't really always think of. Like, how does one actually benefit from listening to a talk? So first it goes into the way one doesn't gain any benefit is if one holds the teacher in contempt, one holds the teaching in contempt, or one holds oneself in contempt. That's the three ways one doesn't gain any benefit. Or one is mentally trying to refute the speaker as they're speaking, so therefore one gains no benefit. I just find that so interesting. One holds oneself in contempt. So it's like if we're listening to a talk but having this mental thought train going of like, yeah, I'll never get this, or I'll, yeah, some sort of hopeless case. So one holds oneself in contempt, then that's one of the factors to not benefiting from the teaching. So I would expand on that a little bit. I could say listening with a clear mind, an open mind. Just being able to temporarily drop some of our baggage and just being able to take in, consider what's being said. Actually consider what does it mean to actually connect my experience together, connect the dots, and eventually we'll be able to see what is my sense of dissatisfaction, my sense of discontent actually coming from. Or what is this good mood coming from? What is it arising from? It doesn't just happen automatically or by itself. It's all these causes and conditions. So taking it a step further, Paññā is that which discerns arising and passing away. And that's the core insight for stream entry. And that's like Anya Kondanya saw that at the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, at the end it says he discerned all that arises passes away. So all dhammas that arise come to cessation. And their very cessation is actually defined by the fact that they arose. So it's a... what is it about that insight of arising and passing away? I mean, it seems like a no-brainer that everything's impermanent, arises and passes away, but there's an angle that we're not seeing it. We're not seeing it with Paññā. We're perhaps only seeing it in a intellectual way with study knowledge. All that arises passes away. But seeing it with Paññā is more like when there's arising... When there's arising, that very arising defines passing away. You could even say, in a sense, that arising is passing away. because it's a passing away of what was there previous to it, so that arising and passing away are actually one and the same thing. This is the deeper meaning of a Nichung. And then when we, the implications of that, when we apply that to our whole experience, then there's actually a flow or a flux. There's a flow of a Nichung that the body and mind is enmeshed in. That is the body and mind. You could even say that. It is a Nichung. It is the very definition of a Nichung. So starting to look in and see with those eyes more clearly. That's different, actually, than, say, experiencing a wonderful spring day and then saying, oh, no, I shouldn't be enjoying this, you know. It's all impermanent, it's all Nichung. So what we're talking about with Panya is much different than just slapping a label on our experience, just saying a Nichung, a Nichung, a Nichung. So we're looking at how to hold it within the flow of experience, how to see it everywhere, how to realize that we are it. That way we can develop wholesome dhammas like appreciation, gratitude. Oh, we can be in a beautiful spring day listening to the birds and we can appreciate what we have and be grateful for what we have. And we can actually use that wholesome dhamma as a springboard into samadhi, meditation. That's the pamoja, it's the delight. Learning how to skillfully use that sense of delight, and the panya then sees that that sense of delight can be a entryway into the meditation, so that we can sit down, say we're walking in the forest, say walking the loop trail, and we give rise to a sense of delight, the beauty of the nature and the clean air, and we decide to sit down somewhere, and then using that sense of delight in order to enter into the meditation and breathing in, breathing out, breathing in the clean, pure, cool air, and breathing out, and in the flow of experience. And that's a Nichung, but we're not slapping a label on it saying, you know, it's all impermanent, I shouldn't enjoy this. You know, the Buddha said, you know, don't enjoy sensual pleasures. So already we're not with the experience if we're telling ourselves that. Yes, it's true, according to the books, don't get attached. Yes, it's true, the sensual realm is a danger, and yet, how do we hold that? Aversion's also a danger. So, it would be a mistake to react to the beautiful experience with aversion to try to push it away. Or do we know it and we can be in it and we can learn from it? I think that's the key. Panya, another aspect or angle or a facet of panya, is that faculty of understanding and the faculty of learning. So when we know with a mind that we're open, sense of knowing, sense of mindfulness, and a sense of being willing to learn from the experience, I would think that's correct practice. So during the winter retreat, we have 14 more days. It can seem like the end is close, but also some, you know, people will save up their money all year just to go on a 10-day retreat. So we do have some time. Much can be done in 14 days, and much can be learned if we're open. The panya can increase in this short time we have remaining to us. So just to have that ability to come back to the experience and connect some of the dots in our experience, see what we can learn and how we can flow through the experience in a way that is enjoyable, not to push that joy away if it arises, not to push that delight away if it arises, but to know it and learn from it, understand it, see what the cause of it is, make use of it. So I don't want to go on too long this evening, and it is a beautiful evening that we can get back to our kutis, get back to our practice, so I'll leave it there.
Amen.